Hey all, this is Chris with a quick note to let you know that the news is going to seem a little outdated in this episode. And the reason for that is because we recorded everything and we had a talk-in, we had the news segment, we talked about The Old Republic as an upcoming game. Well, by the time you hear this, it's going to have been out for a little while. That's because I had to go and lose the entire discussion segment. Just completely disappeared off my hard drive. But we recorded as soon as we could at our earliest opportunity to make sure this episode got out right away, and I hope you enjoy the episode in spite of the outdatedness of the news.
Yes, it's time once again for Rule Zero. This is the Rule Zero Podcast. The podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. Let's do this.
Welcome back. This is Rule Zero. I am Chris.
And I am Pete.
And together we are the Rule Zero Podcast, and we are here to entertain and amuse and enlighten you. And Pete, tell me what you've been doing this in between the last episode and now.
Gaming related, not that much. My friend, well, our friend, Ron,
yep,
has been running a game. It's been a D&D 3.5, or as he calls it, a D&D 3.25.
Why so?
He allows incorporated elements of 3.0.
Yeah, okay.
So, mostly when it comes to spellcasting and things like that.
Like the durations of things?
Yes.
Okay.
So, he kind of on what I had done before for that same group, I had retconned Against the Giants for them.
Uh-huh.
So, he retconned a module that he had read was considered the worst module ever written by TSR.
Which one is that?
I cannot think of the name of it to save my life, or else I would tell you.
Does it have Silver Princess in the title?
No, it does not. Although I own that module myself.
There was some controversy over that one. I wasn't sure if that was the worst one.
No, it's not that it was the worst one. It's that there's a booby shot.
In the module.
In the module.
Which is, you know,
Lutus's art.
I can't really imagine why that would cause any trouble, considering all the boobies in the Monster Manual and deities and demigods.
True, or even in the end of the DMG. So
yeah, but go on.
So it's, I believe it has village in the title.
Hmm.
And so far it is really bad, I have to say. We've found a small burnt out city. The few remaining population has requested that we go on a little, you know, excursion up north to sell what few crops they have. And in the interim, we've run into lizard men, and that's three sessions into the game. That's all we've done.
Ah, yes, the exciting world of fantasy mercantilism and trade.
Indeed. I was hoping to play accountants and actuaries.
And these lizard men are just messing that up for you.
They are. They're totally screwing with us.
Wow. Well, I have been playing I actually haven't played a session since we last spoke, but I'm still ostensibly running a Serenity game, and I'm supposed to work on the next session. They are playing a crew of a fairly alliance-friendly crew. There's only a couple people that aren't real core world citizens, and they have a really swanky ship, and the captain won the ship in a poker game, and so he's got this ship that is like way beyond their means, and he's using it to run luxury cruises between for wealthy businessmen, basically.
Uh-huh.
It's like a one of those luncheon cruise things you can get on the harbor in most, you know, port cities.
Yeah, like Baltimore, for example.
As a for instance.
Yes.
But you know, for business jaunts and stuff like that. And right. These three businessmen, or four business people, have hired them to go out to Triumph to set up a medical installation under the Blue Sun banner. And they have, the guys basically hired them saying, we'll pay whatever you want, and we want lots of steaks for every meal, and, you know, money's not an issue, we'll pay extra for if you get us there fast. And since he had the fastest ship in the port, they hired him, and they got near Triumph, and there is debris in the air, and they found evidence of pirates and or reavers
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And, of course, two of the characters being core world citizens don't believe that Reavers exist, because that's the official government line, is that there's no such thing as Reavers.
Right. They're a scary story you tell to children.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the crew is actually split right now with, what the actual threat is. And when they approach Triumph, they happen to glimpse a fleet of Reaver ships.
Oh my god!
On the opposite side of the moon.
Wow.
Of Triumph. And, I don't even know if officially Triumph has a moon, but it does now, because there's very little detail available on some of these, Rim worlds.
Well, many of them, from what I understand, are moons. They're moons usually of hot giants.
Some of them would have no gravity, except for the fact that in the Serenity universe, they can make gravity if they want.
Oh, that's an interesting shake-and-bake thing you can do.
Yeah, so, all of these worlds are actually... Most of them are satellites of other planets, and, there's dozens of inhabited pieces of rock floating around in space.
Yes.
It's all one star system. So it's, there's no shortage of places to go. And it's, it's the Western motif. So I've got the, the Reavers basically taking the place of the Indians in the Western.
Right.
So that's how that game. Yeah, and they've just arrived on the planet. I actually had four game sessions with them in space, and I really didn't want to do that because that's not really the core of the game.
Okay.
But it's just like we had a couple sessions where the trivialities extended into, a very long, drawn-out sessions.
Hmm.
So I kind of should have cut to the chase.
As it were.
Yeah. But I didn't. But they said they've been having fun, so we'll see how that goes. And now they're... actually getting frustrated because none of them are combat monsters.
And that's okay.
They're looking at a fleet of Reaver ships. So they're kind of wondering, what the heck are we going to do here? Anyway, that's
Martim? I don't know. I'm just kicking that out there.
Yeah. That's one of my... one of my premise of the world is that the movie never happened.
Because
I don't really like the explanation of Reavers in the movie.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, so I'm just, Reavers just are. They're not going to be explained.
When you
explain them, they lose a certain quality.
Scary.
Yeah. In Search of the Unknown, by the way, is the module you were looking for?
That could very well be.
I will have to
discuss it with Ron again.
Okay.
But that could very well be. It sounds probably like that's the situation.
I'm looking at Topless Robot listing the 8 worst Dungeons & Dragons adventure modules that were made.
Most likely it is In Search of the Unknown.
Is that why he chose it?
Yeah, actually, he chose it to see exactly how bad it was.
Yeah, okay.
So
it's B1. It should be in Basic.
Oh, maybe it isn't that one.
Okay.
What are the other ones? What else is on that list?
On the list, this is a long talk in. We have Descent into the Depths of the Earth, which is D1.
Okay.
That's part of the Demon Web Pits saga,
right?
Which
mm-hmm.
is largely hailed as a classic. I'm not quite sure. This works.
Demon Web Pits itself is good, but the lead-in is bad because that's the link dungeon between G3.
Okay.
So,
Gargoyle is 7. 6 is Dungeon Land and / The Land Beyond the Mirror, Magic Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, the Alice in Wonderland adaptation.
Right.
Yeah. That was pretty stupid.
Yeah.
it lists the entire Dragonlance series.
Well, that goes without saying.
And a reprint of In Search of the Unknown. Huh. Castle Greyhawk, Lost Caverns of Sojcanth, which I loved playing when I was a teenager. I don't know what they're talking about. Now, maybe they're just like nitpicking like all the things that don't make sense, which, of course, none of the modules really made sense.
Oh, no. They're rife with things like that.
And the last one is The Forest Oracle.
No, I think it must be In Search of the Unknown.
Yeah.
But one way or the other...
What else are you playing?
It's bad. I am also running Mouse Guard for my son, Ronan.
You know what?
That's
perfectly topical with our discussion today.
It is.
Of the Family Jewels.
But exactly.
We'll get into that later. How's the game going?
The game's going very well. He has taken... He opted to start playing with a veteran guard mouse.
Is that like a power level kind of thing?
Kind of. Basically, when you start out in character creation, you can choose from different levels of guard experience. You can start out as a tenderpaw, or you can go and become like, a pathfinder, a guardsman, senior guardsman, patrol leader, and then grand high poobah of the guard. And then, and he chose to be a patrol leader. So that puts him kind of older than most of the other mice. And so as he's playing alone, we're doing a solo game. I gave him an apprentice who's a Tenderpaw. And sent him off to bring a message of great import from the Citadel of the Guard to the local Guard battalion down south. And in while he was on the way, he encountered renegade guard mice and a couple of other things, and so he doesn't know who to trust. But one of the things that he did was he asked if one of the things you do during character creation is you create a friend. And so he has as his friend another guards mouse about his same age, and he said, could he be the person in the garrison? Could he be the mouse in the garrison that we're going to? And I said, we'll roll. And so he rolled, and sure enough, this was the head of the garrison. And so he got there and he said, well, at least I found somebody I can trust. One of the things he didn't realize was that he brought along with him a weasel, and the weasel has friends. And so they're about to get into a big fight out in the field. That's where we left it as a kind of cliffhanger, was he brought his apprentice.
Good start. How long have you been running?
That game we've actually been running for 2 years.
Yeah, okay.
He's already lost an apprentice.
Well, let's get into that later.
Okay.
Because that's exactly the kind of thing that we want to talk about later on in the main topic.
I concur.
Okay.
Are you doing anything other than Serenity?
I'm running I'm running two Pathfinder games and playing in a third.
Now, are you is this with the same group who's doing Serenity, or is this with completely different groups? Or
I have one player in. Okay, I'm actually running two of my the two Pathfinder games I'm running are both playing through Legacy of Fire. And one of the players in what I call my B group, because they're slower because they're, we're only playing that every other week, and that one frequently gets canceled.
Gotcha.
One player from the B group is in my Serenity game.
Okay.
And my wife is in my A group.
Okay.
So and she's in the Serenity game as well.
Groovy.
So that's all the crossover there. Okay. But yeah, I ended up with a 10 people that wanted to play Legacy of Fire, and I said, I got to split this up.
No doubt. Wow.
So, and the B group is alternating with the other Pathfinder game that I'm playing, which is we started out in Carrion Crown, but went off the rails, as they say. And we're now doing the GM's sort of homebrew campaign, although it's kind of set in Galarian, which is the campaign world.
Liberally flavored with Galarian.
Yeah. He doesn't know that much about Galarian, so we're not really going, we're not really looking at the books and going, okay, this is something we know to be true.
Right.
You know, if it's something that we need for, you know, the characters that we created when we were playing Carrion Crown, we're like, is this still true?
Yeah.
So we're actually kind of in between worlds right now because he really likes Ravenloft, which is why he started out Carrion Crown.
Gotcha.
And so now we're kind of, we keep kind of flirting back and forth with this demiplane idea where we're kind of losing touch with our Galarian gods from time to time.
Ooh, aha.
My voice cracked.
That's fine. It was about time you went through puberty.
I've been waiting.
We all have.
All right. And that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Okay. That's what I'm doing.
That's what you're doing. So why don't we talk about some news?
Sounds good.
Okay. We'll cut to the news.
It is time for the news.
I have two news items this week. And much as I don't want to focus on MMOs, both of my news items are MMO related.
That's okay. I myself have some news, but both of them are more along the lines of what I want for the holidays.
Why don't you start? Because okay. Then we won't be talking straight off the cuff about MMO news.
Sounds great. Okay, well, the first thing is, following off the talk-in, the Mouse Guard role-playing game box set is out in time for the holidays.
Now, what is the difference between the box set and, say, the book?
The book was just the rule book. The dust cover for the book was actually the map of the Mouse Territories.
Okay.
In the box set, you get not only the rule book, you get a 48-page supplement that has all new adventure scenarios. You get three 12 action card decks, one for the GM and some for players.
Okay.
You get condition cards.
Now, are these cards something that were part of the regular role-playing game, or is this new for the box set?
Actually, that came up because what we ended up doing was making our own index cards that had the actions on them.
Okay.
And then we could lay them out in front of us and flip them so that the opponent didn't know what you were doing. And then when the time came, you would flip your, everybody would flip their first action at the same time.
Okay.
And then we could resolve conflict that way. And then condition cards are if you're hungry, if you're sleepy, if you are,
these are
things, you're wounded,
things
like
that have a mechanical effect in the game that you should have a reminder of.
Right. And so you can have that, you know, hanging over your sheet so that you're reminded that, you know, I'm exhausted. I can't, you know, possibly try to exert myself for this.
Yeah. Paizo published a similar set for Pathfinder.
Gotcha. They also have character sheets, GM sheets, which they didn't have available for download originally, which is nice.
Okay.
They have a GM screen, which I'm not sure what they must have on that, but it probably has the range of difficulties. And then it has mouse dice and a very nice map of the territories.
Better than the dust cover of the old book.
Better than the dust cover of the old book.
Okay. The inside of the dust cover of the book?
The inside of the dust cover of the book was the map. The outside was the collected members of the guard that had appeared in the comic book.
I see. Okay.
Including the main protagonists.
Now, since we're on the topic, and I'm assuming a lot by, you know, not bringing this up, but tell me about Mouse Guard.
Oh, well, Mouse Guard was originally a comic book by Dave Peterson.
Okay.
And essentially, he kind of based it off of some ideas he'd had in high school that were also related to some gaming situations he'd had.
So the players are mice?
The players are mice. The comic book that he wrote were about mice living in this mythical territory that they've been defending for centuries. And the Mouse Guard are kind of the paladins. They're kind of the order that keeps the peace.
Is there magic and witchcraft, or is it just ordinary faux medieval society where everybody's a mouse?
There's alchemy, but there's no real wizardry.
Okay.
So they can cobble together things alchemically and some rudimentary engineering, but otherwise it is mostly faux medieval technology.
Okay.
Real world type stuff. Kind of one of the nifty things is that one of the things that you can have that's a really big deal is a belt.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, because mice don't have pockets.
But they have pants?
No, they don't have pants either.
Why would they need a belt?
They need a belt to carry extra things.
Makes sense.
Because otherwise your hands are full.
Ah, okay.
So that's the thing, is that one of the things about the mice is that the more human-like they are, the more kind of stuff they have. The less human-like they are, the more mice-like they become.
Is that a sliding measure in the game?
It is a sliding measure in the game.
Okay. So a mouse can become a regular mouse.
Yeah, it can become essentially feral.
Okay.
The other thing is that the guard to delineate themselves, they wear cloaks.
Okay.
So the cloak is their badge of office, more or less. Everybody else wears like vests or little jackets and things like that. So
kind of a musketeer thing going on.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. So what else about the box did you want to tell me about?
Oh, that's pretty much it. It's an excellent way, I think, to get into the game.
Okay. It has the complete set of game rules in it?
It has the complete book. The same book that I started with.
Okay. So it's buying the hardcover book or the whatever one has the dust cover and the box set would be redundant.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. What's I'm looking at Amazon right now. It's got a list price of $70.
Yes.
$69.95. So that's a bit pricey. So that
it's true, but you can get it for much cheaper.
Yes. Amazon is selling it for less than $45.
Yes.
So
and there are other places also like Burning Empires and Drive-Thru RPG.
Uh-huh.
That are selling it for less as well.
Is there a PDF version of it?
I believe there is, but I would have to go back and check on the Burning Wheel / Mouse Guard forum.
Okay. Well, that's worth looking into. I have never played Mouse Guard. Does that use the Burning Wheel rules?
It's what I like to call Burning Wheel Light.
Okay.
Because it isn't as intensive as Burning Wheel is when it comes to resolution and things like that. It's a much faster play. And it's a much simpler play, and to my mind, a much more elegant play. I think that a lot of times, one of the problems I've had with Burning Wheel in the past is that it gets bogged down sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
because there are, especially in combat, there can be an elaborateness of rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in Nosgard, you don't have that sort of situation.
Okay. Well, my first news item was something that probably everybody knows by now, is that the Star Wars Old Republic MMO is coming out on December 20th. And there's on the website, which is www.swtor.com, it's saying that if you pre-order, you can play up to 5 days early. And I don't know the specifics on that, but I imagine if you get it more than 5 days early, you can play 5 days early.
There you go.
So the release date is December 20th, pre-order, and you can download it as far as I know. That I believe that my friend told me that they were able to download it. You can play it before it's supposed to be released.
Hey, wow.
And you can play in the Sith Empire or the Galactic Republic. Those are the two sides you can choose. And I imagine, much like World of Warcraft, there won't be communication possible between the two factions. But I could be wrong about that, because, you know, Sith and good and evil talk frequently in
yes.
the Star Wars franchise. I have to say, if you're playing a Sith Jedi or anti-Jedi, whatever they're calling them, Sith, whatever, I just got to say, do not use Force Lightning. It is really bad for your complexion.
Ah.
This is evidenced in the films.
That's true.
And
also
for
your optic nerves, apparently.
Yeah. It's just bad for you all around. If you must use it, exfoliate.
Do you think that really Emperor Palpatine would feel better if he'd had like a loofah and maybe a decent scrub?
I think a skin cream would have made him a much more relaxed dude.
You think so?
It's something that, you know, should be explored in fiction, I believe.
It's definitely something to be considered.
Yes. Yes. So what else you got?
The other thing I have is Burning Wheel Gold, which is the revised Burning Wheel. It's been updated. It's been trimmed down a little bit. From what I understand, the combat resolution has changed, and I'm gagging to play it and haven't had a chance to yet, but you can pick it up online for $25.
Wow.
And it used to come in two separate books. It used to come in the Character Burner and the main Burning Wheel rule book.
Uh-huh.
And now it comes in one big hardbound monster.
Oh, that's good.
That looks very, very sexy to me.
Uh-huh.
And there you go.
So this would have all of the supplemental rules, like magic burning like the magic burner, the monster burner, all of the other burner books.
It has some monsters, it has some magic outside of just sorcery.
Okay.
But it doesn't have the elaborateness of the original books.
Okay.
I'm not sure that much has changed about magic, so I'm not sure that they need to necessarily mm-hmm. mess with that so much.
But
it'd be kind of cool to get the, you know, to have the updated monsters, that's for sure.
Did you say you had it, or you're...
No, I'm gagging for it.
Okay.
That's my what I want for Christmas.
Ah, okay.
This year is Burning Wheel Gold.
Well, so. If you know, if you were real good this year, you'd have gotten it, but
but I'm not, so it doesn't.
I'm really, you know, not going to make any promises on behalf of Santa, because I know you pretty well, Pete, and
that's true.
I'm really not gonna promise that's gonna happen.
I can't help it that I'm licensed to below behave.
So was that it about Burning Wheel?
That's it about Burning Wheel. I think. Anyone who receives it and is a fan of Burning Wheel will not be disappointed.
Would somebody be able to start playing Burning Wheel with this?
Yes, and I would actually recommend that they start on the Gold Book.
Okay.
Just because it seems a little more concise
mm-hmm.
with a lot of the chaff separated from the wheat from the two books mm-hmm. system.
Well, I have the books, and I have to say it was pretty daunting to try to make a character with a whole catalog of options and conditions and stuff like that.
It makes that a little bit easier. That's become a more streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
It also gives you a couple of examples of, say, you want to play, I don't know, like Jack Sparrow.
Okay.
And you can, it'll show you what you can do step by step to make a Jack Sparrow type character.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I remember when my wife made up her character, she ended up with wanting to have something about her character that she couldn't have because she had chosen something at an earlier stage in character creation.
Yes.
So does it help out with that at all? Do you know?
I believe so. From what I've heard of the character creation, that yes, it will help out with that.
Okay.
But there are still certain things that you have to take into account if you, you know, choose a life path for a certain amount of time, especially as a human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain avenues that are going to be cut off to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to suddenly come from being a villager and the next time around be one of the royal guard.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't going to happen like that. So.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yes.
My other tidbit.
Yes.
Okay, tiny tidbit. This is a newslet item. Okay. I just downloaded and started playing DC Universe Online.
Oh.
And it looks beautiful.
How does it play?
It plays like rubbish. No, it's a completely different.
Sorry.
It's a completely different control system than I'm used to with other, you know, other first person or sorry, third person perspective games. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've been playing Warcraft for so long. I'm used to the, you know, the WASD you know, controls, and then, you know, they're there, but they do different things.
Ah.
So it's a little bit hard to get control, and I'm sure there's a learning curve, and it's probably not very steep. But right now, after just, you know, playing it for probably about an hour and a half by now, I haven't gotten much accomplished because I keep messing up my movement. And
so you keep dying.
Well, no, I haven't actually died yet.
How do they deal with the with the regeneration after dying? What happens to you?
Once I die, I'll let you know.
Oh, okay.
So that's a tidbit. But the main thing about that is the opening cinematic.
Uh-huh.
Astonishing. Absolutely beautiful. And it has nothing to do with the gameplay, but it's a little movie that lets you see the premise of the game you're playing in.
Right, because, you know, doesn't it take place in the future or something?
Yeah, it takes...
Yeah, I've seen the cinematic.
Luther kills Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman.
Yes.
And it's just a beautiful little computer animation that I wish there were a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gorgeous thing, and it's on YouTube. You can just search for DC Universe Online.
Gotcha.
And watch it, and I highly recommend it because I've actually just watched the cinematic 4 times now. It's just beautiful to watch.
Chris enjoys the cinematic.
Yeah. Right. So that's a minor tidbit of news. Do you have something else, or should I go right into my other one?
No, go right into your other one.
I'm 3 for 3 on MMOs today. The big news, you know that I'm a big into Pathfinder.
Yes, I do.
Paizo has announced an MMO license to a new company called Goblin Works. The sole purpose of Goblin Works so far is to create this Pathfinder MMO.
Okay.
And they're saying it's going to be a next generation fantasy sandbox massively multiplayer online game. And by sandbox, they mean as opposed to the theme park model, which is World of Warcraft, where you're experiencing the content and the story that Warcraft is giving you. The sandbox model is more like EVE Online.
Ah, okay.
Where you're sort of carving out your character's niche in this world, and you can affect the world and how other people experience the game.
Right.
By how you play the game.
Gotcha.
That's the vaguest description that I can give, but that's all that I know right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Goblin Works is based in Seattle, just like Paizo, and the Paizo people are involved with it. CEO Lisa Stevens is part of Goblin Works. Ryan Dancy, who has a lot of gaming credit to his name, and he worked with WotC in the 90s and is credited as being the person who created the open gaming license.
Huh.
Against the better judgment of many people in the business, decided that you know, it would be a good idea to open up the system. And well, if it weren't for that, there wouldn't be a Pathfinder, quite honestly. So
it's very true.
So he was a VP at WotC, when they did the open gaming license and created third edition. Ryan Dancy also did some work on EVE Online.
Oh, well, there you go. That explains why it does the way it does.
Yeah. That's a paradigm that hasn't really worked with pay to play, games, but, I know that, EVE Online is more like pay for stuff, right? I could be wrong, but I've never played EVE Online, but I've heard many people talk about it and rave about it, and they're quite successful.
Yes. Yes, they are.
And they listed Mark Calmes as the MMO developer, or Calmes, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, as the MMO developer. But he's got credits with City of Heroes and a bunch of other, you know, MMO or computer games. Paizo posted an article, but that article seems to have disappeared from the searchable function, but there's now a link to the GoblinWorks site. It's the article itself is probably somewhere in the backlog of their blog, but I didn't go searching too deeply because I found this link, which is to goblinworks.com. Pretty simple. And you can check out more information about the Pathfinder Online. That is the name so far. It may change.
Right.
There. And the rules are going to be different because it's not possible to make a D20 OGL based computer game unless you're Wizards of the Coast.
Ah.
So that wasn't part of the open gaming license.
Right.
So the game engine is going to be different. I don't know which terms of art they're able to use. Like, you know, I don't know if your first level wizard is going to have a magic missile spell. Not entirely sure your first level wizard is going to be able to be called a wizard.
Interesting.
But you know, we'll see how that goes. It's probably years down the road. But right. Making MMOs is a lot easier than it used to be.
Well, there you go.
So it might be as, you know, I would guess that the shortest amount of time they could build this in is 2 years.
Okay.
But they have not announced a date. They have not announced any content. It's all very vague, but, you know, you can check it out yourself.
Do you think they're probably going for a Christmas of 2013 then, if that's the...
You know, any Christmas release is probably a good idea for a new game.
Right.
But, you know, it could be... You know, it could be a summer game. It could be, you know, it could be anything really at this point. It's pointless to speculate is my point.
I see. Okay.
So that's all I had.
That's not going to stop me from doing it, of course, and that's all that I had.
Okay. So without further ado, let us go into the heart of the matter.
This is the heart of the matter.
And let's try this again. This is take two on the heart of the matter for the Family Jewels episode 3. So we're getting back together and talking about generational gaming, basically. We are talking about our family jewels. Yes, those precious little sparkling gems we call our children.
I call them Pete and the twins. Oh, no, those children. Sorry.
Yes, our... The fruit of our loins, or whoever's loins they're fruit of.
Very fruity. Very loiny.
Getting our kids into gaming, which I have done, and you have done.
Yes.
And a lot of people have done.
Yes. Well, I was interested to kind of discuss this a little bit, because one of the things that I noticed when I was at Gen Con was that they actually had an entire room set aside just for beginning gamers between the ages of, say, 8 and 13.
Okay. So people came to the con with their kids who maybe they didn't expect to have something for them to do with gaming?
Well, I mean, I think sometimes people don't necessarily think, you know, well, it's my hobby, maybe my kids won't think it's cool enough or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then some kids just kind of like it. You know, they've sat there and watched their parents play and have been itching to get involved. And
right. I know our kid watched us play a number of times and was, you know, kind of interested, but not really, you know, understanding everything that was going on, because we were playing, I think, second edition D&D and then third edition D&D when, you know, when she came to live with us.
Right.
So, and a lot of the time when we were playing, she was also babysitting somebody's kids, you know, whether yours or somebody else's, but, you know, she a lot of the time she didn't get to watch us actually gaming.
Right.
But she was interested and she wanted to join.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you had your son out in the room when you guys were gaming and
I would have the group over to my place because I had my two kids and it was hard for me to find, you know, adequate babysitting. So they would just come over to my house and we would game in a separate room from where the kids were. And my son would kind of sit in the doorway and watch us do what we're doing. So,
yeah, because the kids always want to do what the grown-ups are doing.
Well, you know, at that age especially. Mm-hmm. You know, around 8, 7, 8, 9. They want to do the cool things.
Yeah, and about that time, we kind of thought she was ready. I have one daughter, and we kind of thought she was ready to, you know, start gaming. And we were talking about getting her into a small game with just the family, my wife, my daughter, and I, which never actually materialized. So it was in planning for a long time. But I had planned to start her on a simplified version of D&D, this, you know, the same system we were already playing that right. she had been watching.
Gotcha.
That turned out not to be the case. I had made up I had a kind of a nugget for a sort of fairy tale-ish kind of D&D story. Mm-hmm. Where the solution was not necessarily hit something until it falls down.
Oh, right, because you utilized that storyline on an actual adventure later on.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. got that. You know, it had been sitting in my head for so long, I figured, well, you know what? I can adapt this for the grown-ups. And that was different, adapting something I'd planned for a kid for a grown-up. But her actual first gaming experience, as I recall it, I was not there for. I was working or in class or something, and there was an aberrant White Wolf game. That's the superhero dark future kind of game.
Right. And yeah, it's part of the Aberrant
Trinity.
Oh no, sorry. Adventure Aberrant Aeon is what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right.
But Aberrant was the game that they were playing. It was brand new at the time or right. fairly new. And so there was a demo game at the hobby store and, our friend was playing. And so he took her there and, I can't remember if my wife was there or not. I think she was. But she played a teleporter with claws, and in her first game, she teleported behind the enemy and eviscerated him with her claws, and a gamer was born.
There you go.
She was
the fires of Aberrant.
Yeah, she was hooked on gaming from that point on.
Nice.
She remembers it a little differently. She seems to recall White Wolf or Werewolf being her first game. Mm-hmm. Another storyteller system right. game. But we were playing a Wild West game here in the house, and she had been watching fairly closely, and we had been reading her the Little House on the Prairie series, so she knew the era that it took place in generally. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain to an 8-year-old, you know, concepts of eras in history.
Right.
But that was the closest thing we could kind of compare it to. You know, people walk around in, you know, old style clothes and don't have cars. Mm-hmm. So that was
there. You go.
So she understood the world because she'd been reading the books, and we had some episodes of the old TV series for her to see.
Oh.
So she made up a character kind of based on Laura Ingalls and named her Laura, except that she was a werewolf.
Oh well, there you go.
And
little werewolf on the prairie.
Yeah. So she joined in our game as a foundling that the rest of the werewolves picked up, and she ran with the pack for a while. But that game didn't last very long after she joined it, and not because of her. It just collapsed over a variety of reasons that involve, you know, coordinating, you know, 6 or 7 adults into a schedule.
Yeah. Well, that's always a chore.
Yeah, but she had seen us playing D&D for years, so she wanted to play a D&D game, and that didn't happen until a few years ago when I started up a brand new campaign, and she could join it. So
there you go.
So she is now gaming weekly with us.
You mean she's gaming with you on a weekly basis?
Yes. Pardon my ambiguity. Actually, she's gaming quite strongly.
There you go.
She's playing a ninja right now. She was playing a sorcerer in the previous campaign. So we're actually doing an adventure path now where she's playing a ninja. And so we had I had run a homebrew campaign before this, but now I'm running one of the Paizo adventure paths. So she's, you know, now an experienced gamer because of you know, we tried to bring her in gently, but she was brought in with eviscerating a guy from behind. So,
there you go.
You know, you take what you get.
And how.
So how'd you get Ronan into it?
Well, Ronan used to, like I say, shadow the games that I ran out on my front porch. Mm-hmm. I would run a game called Cat, in which, of course, the characters play a cat. Mm-hmm. And the cat's world is essentially our world, but with little tweaks and things like that. And so at one point they were in a junkyard. and they had to get past the junkyard dog. And the rats had stolen something. So I was trying to play a multitude of rats that were interacting with the cats, and my son came up and said, can I play some of the rats? And I said, oh, yeah, sure. So he played some of the rats, and he improvised a bunch of stuff that made me scramble and have to rewrite some of the ideas that I had shot down.
Nice.
But they were really good. Yeah. So I let him play through that session, and then after the session, one of the players had said that he wasn't comfortable with my boy being involved in it, so I said, okay.
How old was he at that time? You said he was 8?
He was 8, I think. Okay. Yeah. Yes, I believe this would have been summer of 2009.
Okay.
And he was really, really into continuing on with the gaming thing. So at about that time, the Mouse Guard game had come out. And as fate would have it, we had just finished the first Redwall book. And so he created a character named Matthias. And in Mouse Guard, you're allowed to kind of decide how experienced your player is. And so he picked a patrol leader, a guy who's, a mouse that's been at it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him his first apprentice, and off they went.
And he handled that. He took to it well.
He took to it very well. It was a little clunky at first, cause he didn't fully understand the dice dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
But once we got rolling with, so to speak, with that, he was on board. He understood that, one, twos, and threes didn't help him. Four, fives, and sixes were the way to go.
Okay. So, and it was just you and him?
And it was just he and I, yeah. We just did a one-on-one game for a while. And then we played that through the summer. And then he came back to visit me at Christmas, and I had just gotten the Star Wars role-playing game book.
Okay. The D20 one?
The one that had come out just before 4th edition.
Okay.
So you see a lot of the transition from
right.
3.5 right. to 4.0 in it.
Yeah, I believe that one's called the Saga Edition. I'm not quite sure why.
Correct.
It just is.
And he decided that he wanted to play a guy who wasn't a Jedi,
mm-hmm.
but was part of the fledgling Rebel Alliance.
So you played early New Hope era?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, prior to New Hope, just barely, but still prior to New Hope.
Okay. So
Mon Mothma was relatively young, let's put it that way.
Okay.
But yeah. So and since then, we've gained in a couple more things. He actually got involved in a game that I ran. My buddy Matt was in town, and I ran for my friend Matt and Ron and my son, and the three of them had a great time. It was a very short run. It was only about 2 hours long, but everybody had a blast.
Oh, that's good. So he has played with veteran gamers,
yes.
since then.
Yes.
Okay.
My friend Matt was very impressed because he just sat there and went, wow, he's really good. The funny, there's one part about playing with Ronan that I'd left out, which was Matt had called me in the middle of a Mouse Guard game back in 2009
mm-hmm.
and said, can you talk? And I was like, I'm kind of busy right now. And he goes, oh, what are you doing? And I said, I'm gaming with my son. And he was quiet for a minute, and he goes, wow, I would have loved to game with my father when I was 9 years old.
Right.
In fact, I would have given a testicle to do that. I'm really upset. I have to go. And he hung on by me.
I'm sure that our father's generation didn't do that,
No, true. No, it's very, very true. They totally didn't. In fact, the concept of games and entertainment outside of the physical sports arena, if it wasn't for money, then it was just something lighthearted that you did sometimes with the kids or with friends at an after dinner party kind of thing.
Right.
So.
Well, I don't know if I ever even conceived when I started gaming when I was 11, 10 or 11, that I would be doing this when I was 40.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Because, it was a while before I met a grown-up that played.
Well, I'd have to say that it was the same for me, except that I had been going to these, the DASVAM, the Denver Area Science Fiction Conventions,
mm-hmm.
and I had met people who were gamers who were older than I was.
Yeah, it was...
30s, so...
Yeah, I think when I got to college, I met some older gamers.
Yes, same here.
Yeah. But, So his first game was Cat and then Mouse Guard.
Yes. Well, Mouse Guard was his first official game
okay.
as a player character.
Now, would you say that's friendly to... Would you say that's child-friendly, that the average
yes.
8-year-old could understand it, pick it up, and play it?
I trimmed it down some for at the time, but since we've played in subsequent summers... I've introduced him to more and more of the rules. And in fact, he read the rule book this past summer. And he brought up to me, he goes, "You know, Dad, you were doing this wrong." And I was like, "I wasn't really doing it wrong. I was just trying to keep it simple."
No son of mine's going to be a rules lawyer on me.
Exactly. Slap that out of you now. But but seriously, he was – so we talked about why the beginning game was different from the game we were playing this summer.
Uh-huh.
So – but yeah. No, I think – Eight or nine is probably good age to start with Mouse Guard.
Yeah, I think with 4th edition D&D, I think 8 or 9 is a good age to start. I wouldn't bring an 8 or 9 year old into a Pathfinder or 3.5 game. It's a little bit complicated.
Okay.
At least without simplifying it.
Right.
Such as with the Pathfinder Beginner Box, which just came out a little while ago. It's still a little on the same level as Pathfinder. It's just presented a little more friendly for visual learners. There's a lot of pretty pictures in it.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I like the pretty pictures.
But yeah, I was actually a little worried about the story that I heard from, you know, my daughter eviscerating a stranger. Mostly because I thought the system might be too complicated. But she didn't have any problem with it. And, you know, as you say, mixed generation gaming, I don't think anybody in the werewolf game had a problem with a child being in the game.
That's cool.
The only problem was that occasionally she would do something that was kind of distracting from the game, mm-hmm. and somebody might get annoyed at her.
Right.
But that didn't happen very much.
That's cool.
And she was focused in the game. She wanted to play.
Right. No, and I have found that in prior gaming with a younger crowd, that they tend to stay focused on, you know, the thing that, you know, they keep their eye on the prize, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And my friend Laura has her children playing Marvel Superheroes. The
new one?
No, the TSR game from the
80s. Oh, okay.
The one that had the face rip system.
Mm-hmm.
That's the slang for it, but it's right. That those are the initials for the stats. But that's apparently simple enough for 8 and 9 year olds to understand.
Well, there you go.
Because she was telling me about their game and they were completely immersed in it.
Nice.
to the point where the young one, I think she was 7 when the game started, would put her hands on her hips and yell or scold the bad guy. As play and
as well, it should be done.
Yes,
I totally agree with that means of communication.
So she had set them up as students in a school for superhero children.
You naughty little oh! I was going to say you naughty little Alcalde. I'm going to do such terrible things to you, but never mind.
No, I don't think so. She had them be students at the Excelsior School of New York.
Oh, dang.
It was very X-Men-y, New Mutants-y kind of place, and I helped her come up with a couple adventure seeds, like they're in the mall and somebody across the street is robbing a bank, you know,
gotcha.
Or somebody's robbing a bank across the street, I should say. Mm-hmm. And they just completely got into everything. She invented these, you know, ex-students who were, you know, who they knew. Mm-hmm. As the bad guys.
Gotcha.
So it was all on their level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their mom was running the game and they were completely in character the whole time, as far as I've heard. She sent me a printout of the story and my scanner's broken. So I may type it in, but it's a really great story of getting your children to play a game. That they're, you know, because she and her husband play a one-on-one game.
Mm-hmm.
In whatever system they happen to be interested in. I've heard them do a Star Wars game, Shadowrun game, Exalted game. And so the kids see that.
Right.
They want to play the games. And so she made one up specifically tailored for them.
Nice. All right. That's cool.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
It made me happy, and it made me quite entertained to hear the story as well. So.
Fantastic.
So in general, to generalize yes. that kind of thing, do you think any kid would be interested in, if their parents game, do you think most kids would be interested in trying it out?
That's a tough call. I'm going to say no, because or at least it'll be a 50-50 split, because my friend Ron games weekly with a group, and his son and daughter have grown up around it, and neither of them are interested at all in gaming.
Mm-hmm.
They never even asked to join in to that point. There are a couple of other examples like that, but yeah, that's pretty much...
How old are they now?
They're now in their late teens.
Okay, so they've seen it all their lives,
pretty
much.
15. Yes.
Okay, and never, you know, never was something they wanted to do.
Never had any interest whatsoever.
Yeah, so it's not for everybody.
No, it is not. It's not for every geek's child to jump
are,
into.
Are they otherwise out, you know, like more outdoorsy kind of kids?
His daughter is. She plays a different sport each season.
Mm-hmm.
His son, not so much. He's more into the theater and doing the technical aspect of theater.
Ah, okay.
So
that's curious, because a lot of people that play in more immersive role-playing games are theater people that I've met. So,
well, as a matter of fact, there was a group in my theater group in college that came up to me and said, "We hear you run role-playing games. We want to get involved."
Okay.
So,
well, maybe it's just not his time yet.
Well, I think it's because he's technical theater and not the actor.
Ah, okay.
So
there you go. Say your children are watching you game. Let's say you have the most perfect simple role playing game for any age. What age are you going to start the child playing?
I think 8 or 9 is probably a good age.
Okay. There's a guy who whose Twitter feed is NewbieDM. He's also got a website, newbiedm.com, who has a game up called RPG Kids, which is for ages 4 and up.
Oh.
It's a very simple game. He's got some pictures of some character sheets and some of his some game sessions. And apparently his kids just love the game, and he's sending this around for everybody else to do, and it's no real age minimum as far as, like,
that's kind of cool,
getting into a character and having an adventure.
My friend Judd has written an RPG for kids called First Quest.
Uh-huh.
But he still has tailored that more towards the 8 and 9 year old crowd.
Okay.
Actually, I'd even go as far as to say 9 and 10 year old crowd.
Uh huh.
He ran it at a JiffyCon for a crew who were between the ages of 9 and 12.
And how did that go over?
It went over pretty well. They worked surprisingly well together. The various players did so.
Well, that's good that, you know, kids can get into a game that they've never played before and work together and go on their first quest.
Yes. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Oh, they were corporate ninjas. It was great.
Corporate ninjas?
Yes.
Well, okay. What does an 8 or 9 year old know about being a corporate ninja?
Not a lot of them, the fact that it has the word ninja in it.
And so none of them were actual corporate pirates?
Not really corporate pirates per se. Essentially, their jobs were for infiltration and assassination of rival corporations.
Wow. What kid doesn't love that?
Exactly. Hell, I love that.
So, I mean, there are some basic RPG concepts that, you know, kids can easily understand. So depending on the age that, you know, maybe the RPG kids, maybe ages 4 and up, they might not have things like levels.
Yes.
You know, because that's, you know, it's a abstract concept. You're not quite, it's not really easy to explain to someone who doesn't understand, you know, the mechanics of permanence. Oh no, that's earlier.
They haven't reached that Erikson development level yet.
No, that's earlier. But yeah, I mean, obviously you can't play D&D with an infant. Believe me, I've tried.
Sure you can. You just have to hold up the picture of the dragon, and yes, then when he strikes it, the dragon falls dead, and you, yay, yeah, dragon.
You gain a level. You're now 3 years old or whatever. Yeah. Now the but older kids like 8 and 9 have played a lot of video games, and you know, there may be a detrimental effect of video games on RPGs because kids may not have the patience for pen and paper. But I think, on the other hand, there are also some basic RPG foundation concepts in video games that make pen and paper RPGs a lot easier to understand.
Yes.
Like, you've almost every single adventure game on the computer has something about levels.
Right.
You know that when you get to a certain point, you know, the sparks go off, angels sing, whatever it is, but you get better at what you're doing.
Right.
And they understand, you know, a health bar.
Oh, yeah.
and, you know, and resources like mana.
Well, they also understand the concept of a quest, you know, that, mm-hmm. that you go on this thing, you finish certain aspects, and you get a big reward as a result, and then something more difficult comes your way.
Right.
You know, things like that, so.
And, you know, in addition to the video games, they're also seeing these same ideas in movies and cartoons and, you know, whatever other venues of entertainment they're into.
This is true.
So RPGs are probably something that they're a little better at understanding, you know.
Right.
You know, and kids of all ages play, you know, make-believe.
Oh, true.
Which is an RPG, kind of.
No, I mean, it is. I mean, the difference is that there's no set GM.
Right.
You know, everybody takes a whack at it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually some RPGs currently out there that are like that, but that's really the big one, is young imaginative play.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to make a RPG for adults where there is nobody arbitrating, you know, what's official and what is just opinion.
Right.
I know Fiasco is one of those RPGs that doesn't have an actual GM. We have the book. We haven't gotten a chance to play it here yet.
Shabal Hiri Roach is like that too.
I know both you said words.
Both written by the same guy, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
Both written by Jason Morningstar.
Okay.
Yes, it's called Shab Al-Hiri Roach.
Of course it is. What's the concept of that one?
The concept of that one is that everybody plays a professor at a small liberal arts New England college.
Okay.
In the early 1920s. And one of their colleagues has passed away. And he was famous because he was an entomologist.
Mm-hmm.
And he had discovered a roach.
Okay.
In the ruins of a Babylonian prince.
So is this a single story for the entire RPG based around a single story?
Well, essentially what it is the idea behind it that Jason came up with when we talked about it was that he wanted to have a dinner party RPG.
Ah, okay.
And rather than like doing a host a murder mystery thing,
mm-hmm.
he wanted to have something that was a little more RPG-ish and meaty. And so the idea behind it is that everybody plays, there are different events that happen over the course of a school year at this college.
Okay.
And everybody gets to be the GM for an event.
Okay.
So like the cotillion, homecoming, you know, orientation, things like that.
I see.
Are events that happen, and everybody's playing, you know, a member of the faculty. And mm-hmm. then there are NPCs that are in there also. And what ends up happening is that this hyper-intelligent roach comes and makes you an offer.
Okay.
And says, I can make you famous and rich beyond your wildest dreams, but you have to be my host body.
Ooh, okay.
So, and the roach can jump ship at any time.
Okay.
So different people get to be possessed by the roach.
And that signifies you're running the game at that point?
No. That just signifies that you're kind of if you've ever played killer, that just means you were dealt the black ace.
Ah, okay.
That things that would be beneficial or detrimental to other players suddenly becomes beneficial to you.
Ah, okay.
So, things like that.
So it sounds kind of complicated.
It can be. It's actually not as complicated as I'm making it sound. Everybody, you know, if you could give it a quick read, you'd sit there and go, oh, this is actually quite fun, and it is.
But kind of mature in theme a little bit. So not,
yes.
Not really kid-friendly. So.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't put Fiasco, I wouldn't put a kid in Fiasco either.
Right, no.
Not until they've seen a few Coen Brothers movies.
Although it would be kind of fun to put a kid in Fiasco and see what they came up with.
I guess you could tailor it to a kid's story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting experiment.
Oh, there you go. Who killed Cock Robin?
Okay, there you go. it wasn't me, man.
Okay.
So yeah, so we talked about a lot.
Yes, we did.
We talked about any other thoughts on our family jewels.
Other than the fact that we handled it very gently, I may say. But besides that, I think it's great. I think generational gaming is a wonderful thing, and I'm happy that we both have kids who found it interesting enough to get involved.
Yeah, I'm extremely relieved that she grew up kind of nerdy.
Yes,
because you know, she actually enjoys staying home on a Saturday night, throwing dice around a table and killing things, or running away from them, as is the case in the last game.
Right. Which is wonderful.
Yeah. So, and now she's old enough where she's bringing boyfriends home. And I did the only sane thing a gaming girl with a gaming boyfriend can do. I killed his character last night.
Well, you know, as a father, that only makes sense, really.
Yeah. He died heroically. Yeah, okay. But yeah, he held off the monster while the party was able to run away. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had to kill her boyfriend just as a lesson.
Just to remind him who the top dog was.
Right? Yeah, you know who's got the power here. It's me. Yeah. No, it was a good death.
Well, fantastic.
I was proud of her choice in boyfriends for someone who would die heroically like that.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah. So when your child brings home a significant other, you better hope he or she games.
Yes. Here's hoping.
Yes.
Of course, by that point, my son might not be interested in gaming any longer, for all I know.
You may have to give him a few years off.
Well, I mean, I myself took a few years off, so that would only make sense.
Yeah, I took a few years off, but only because I couldn't find a game.
Well, there's that, but the other thing is finding gamers of your same philosophy, let's say.
Yeah. That is a topic for another day. We could talk we could talk for another half hour on, you know, mixed philosophies in a single gaming group.
That might be episode 4.
I think it might be. I think we got us a topic.
I think we do.
Okay, we'll call it friction.
Oh, good. I like it.
Okay.
Okay.
So that'll wrap up our discussion on generational gaming.
Indeed.
And next episode, we will talk about friction. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And until next time, okay. We're going to have a write-in campaign here. We need a tag.
Okay.
We need a closing tagline.
We need an outro.
We can't just say good gaming.
That's true.
We can say, here's how you get a hold of us.
Yes.
Which
yes,
we have been.
That's true.
How do we get a hold of us?
They can get a hold of us by going to the RulesZeroPodcast.com website.
That is Rule Zero, not Rules Zero.
Sorry, Rule Zero. You're right. Rule Zero website. Yes, RuleZeroPodcast.com.
Yes. Or you can follow us on Twitter.
On Twitter.
As Rule Zero Podcast.
Or on Facebook.
You can like us on Facebook. We are the Rule Zero Podcast on Facebook.
We do indeed.
I myself am Chris at Rule Zero Podcast.
And I am Pete at Rule Zero Podcast.
So there are no excuses. There are no excuses anymore. There are a plethora of ways to get a hold of us. Because we want to hear feedback. We live for feedback.
We do. We really do.
So, and we would like to get suggestions for topics because we want to know what people want to hear.
And also, if there are certain people you would like to hear us interview, let us know.
Yeah. And I may have an interview, or perhaps he will wish to guest host.
Okay.
And I will save that for a surprise.
Fantastic.
So why don't we call it a close? Call that a session?
I like it.
Okay. So, good gaming for now, until somebody gives us a better closing line.
I was going to say peace, love, and soul, but I think Don Cornelius would flip in his grave if I did so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how about a simple goodbye?
Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com. Opening theme was written and produced by Rule Zero Podcast, all rights reserved.